Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Today on Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to be talking about how the COVID-19 outbreak is and will affect national healthcare spending. And we'll be talking about how the outbreak will affect the number of uninsured in the U.S., which may or may not affect the first topic. As always, our resident experts on Foresight Friday Roundup to comment on these topics are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Gary Bisbee, co-founder and executive chairman of the Health Management Academy. Hello, gentlemen. Great to be with you again. How are things going?
Going well, Dave.
Hola, Dave.
Merry month of May.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, listen, before we get started, I was just wondering if either of you have watched anything on TV, cable, or through a streaming service while you've been cooped up that you either didn't have time for before or never thought you'd watch. Any recommendations for our listeners?
Well, Dave, we've become somewhat addicted to these British crime dramas. So watching those in numbers that are almost embarrassing. So the shows that we've watched include Broadchurch, The Bodyguard, Inspector Lewis, and Silk. And we're just starting on Sherlock right now. So if you have a penchant for British high crime and misdemeanors, go check some of those out.
Great. Gary, what's got you hooked? Anything?
My daughter and her 8-month-old are living with us during this time. So, of course, we do watch during dinners things that I never would have watched. We're not quite as highbrow as Dave on the British crime movies, but I have become aware of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel that everybody else probably figured out 3 or 4 years ago, but at least now I know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, at least it's not Sesame Street.
Yeah, I wouldn't show your granddaughter the first episode of Broadchurch. It's pretty rough stuff.
Good. Thanks for the tip.
All right, let's talk. Dave, over the past few weeks, we've talked about the impact of the outbreak on hospitals, then on health insurers, and then on medical practices. Those three segments of the industry certainly represent a lot of healthcare spending. So I guess the natural topic for us to talk about next is the short-term and long-term impact of the outbreak on healthcare costs. What are you seeing now, and what do you think we'll see in the future in terms of spending on healthcare services in the U.S.?
Let me start by putting it into perspective, Dave. The annualized GDP numbers for the first quarter came out this week, and they dropped, or the economy decreased by a breathtaking 4.8%. And that doesn't even include the month of April, which was the entire country was basically on lockdown. So that number is just going to get worse. And it, of course, it's highlighted by the more than 30 million Americans that have filed for unemployment in the last month or so. But here's the most amazing part of that statistic. So of the decline, the 4.8% annualized decline, 47% of it, so almost half, was in healthcare, significantly higher, believe it or not, than even the drop in restaurants, food services, and hospitalities, hotels, and so forth. So this inability of people to access elective surgery, go to the primary care physician, and so on, has really hit the industry hard. Short term, once we're back up and going, there's going to be a surge, probably a very substantial surge of people, addressing pent up healthcare issues. So pent up volume will flow into the system. I was on a conversation with Tony Keck from Ballad Health in Tennessee, And they're planning for this and expecting to run nights and weekends for at least 2 to 3 months after they open back up, just to make up for the lost volume. Just to give you an indication of how severe the impact has been, Tony mentioned that level 1 and 2 trauma visits at Ballard had dropped by more than 90%. So short term, there will be a substantial surge in volume as the system addresses pent-up volume that's hasn't been satisfied because of the lockdown. Longer term, the question is the extent to which the system will come back to previous volume levels. And I personally just don't think it's going to happen. We're starting to see the explosion of asset light delivery models. That's accelerating. So virtual care, urgent care centers, retail chains. Also, as Ballard indicated, I think we're going to see health systems go to more intense resource facility utilization. So they get they'll lower their per unit cost by running facilities harder. And part of what's happening almost through brute force is we're squeezing out much of the unnecessary care or shifting it to lower cost locations. And that will leave a permanent mark on the shape of the industry going forward. So the new normal, as we have talked about, will be one in which the movement toward value-based healthcare will accelerate. And it's just happening a lot faster in real time because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Thanks, Dave. Gary, what's your short-term and long-term predictions for healthcare spending?
Inherent in the term spending is if you have it, you can spend it. If you don't, you cannot. And as Dave says, a number of people are now unemployed. A number of people are afraid to go to a hospital or even a surgery center to have procedures done. So there's obviously many fewer procedures underway. My sense of it is that if the surge returns in the fall, as many are predicting, then it's going to be a down year for sure in terms of procedures. And I think that would suggest that personal spending over the course of the year will be down. I think we'll see expenditure due to the COVID outbreak up, and I doubt that they're recorded in March, Dave, DJ. So I think that you're going to see April, May, June, I think we'll see a pretty substantial increase in expenditures. So what that means in terms of healthcare expenditures over the course of the year, probably, I think the best guess is that healthcare spending is going to be probably up, but the personal side of the expenditures will be likely down. That'd be my nether for all of that. All debatable, and that's just a feel for it, not based on a lot of examination of the numbers.
Great, Gary. Dave, anything to add to Gary's thoughts?
Yeah, well, that's a great point about the COVID spending maybe not materializing to the extent it will in March, or not materializing in March to the extent it will in these later months. You know, healthcare is such a strange economic animal. I actually think Gary's half right, that the activity will be up, but the spending will be down. And how can that possibly happen? And it's because hospitals, providers in general, make the majority of their revenues and profits from commercial contracts. And a lot of that comes out of elective surgeries. So we're seeing the simultaneous decrease in the number of members that are part of that have commercial insurance because of the increase in unemployment. And we're seeing significantly less spending from commercial contracts for elective procedures and so on. So I think Gary's half right, and he probably thinks I'm a half wit. But anyway, we'll figure that out, or we'll see.
We'll see. Who knows? I do agree certainly with that point. I do think that if the surge doesn't come back in earnest in the fall, then we'll see a lot of reclamation of people working and visits to their doctor and so on. But the one thing about it is we still have 72 million baby boomers. Half of them are just now, a little bit less than half are not on Medicare. And so as people join the Medicare rolls, they're going to perceive receiving care differently than, let's say, somebody who's unemployed.
Yeah. Hey, one thing that is kind of interesting, because of all of the stimulus going into the pockets of working families, half of American workers right now are earning more staying at home because of the added unemployment benefits, the $1,200 checks to individuals, and even bigger checks to families, and they're not spending as much. So when we look out 6 months, the balance sheet of the American family is actually going to be stronger. The average American family is going to be stronger than it's been in quite a while. So they actually will have more money to spend. I think an interesting question is, will they spend it on healthcare, or the extent to which they'll spend it on healthcare?
Yeah, probably if they need healthcare, they'll spend it. your point is maybe there'll be an adjustment in terms of need, or at least how one would define need. I think perception of illness is kind of a classic indicator of need. So how much you perceive that you need it, what drives how much you use it. Maybe they'll use more virtual means or other kinds of modes of care, which would be less expensive, but all to be seen.
Yeah, that's where I was driving at, which is if it's a dollar out of my own pocket, even if I have it to spend, I'm probably going to be a smarter purchaser with that dollar than I might be if somebody else is paying for it.
Well, guys, that's a good transition to our second topic today, and that's the uninsured. Gary, how do you think that number is going to move, and how will that number affect healthcare costs?
Well, let's talk time frame here. If we're talking this year, Dave, then you have to expect that there will be fewer insured people in 2020 than there were in 2019. And that's going to drive an effect on spending, much like we've been talking about. People will, if they have to dig into their own pocket, they might view receiving care or seeking care differently than if somebody is coming, an insurance company or somebody else is going to pay for it. So my guess is what we'll see is fewer insured and less spending due to that. In the mid to long term, really, it's all about the economy, isn't it? And if we happen to dodge another wave of COVID in the fall, confidence returns, the economy goes up, maybe even accelerates, then we'll probably see a lot of that 30 million on the unemployed rolls coming back into the workforce, and that'll increase. I think we've got now, or had before this, 150 million people on employee health benefits programs. So it sounds like we've got something over 100 million now, maybe 110, something like that. So getting from 110 million back up to 150 is the goal. Seems unlikely this year, but if we don't have a repeat of this COVID outbreak in the fall, maybe we can get halfway back. I guess that would be my instinct on it.
Dave, same thing. Where do you think the uninsured trend is going because of COVID, and how will that affect spending?
Well, Gary's nailed it. Absent structural reform, the uninsured numbers are going to go up. And I kind of liked how he was, Gary, how you were thinking about how we bounce back. If this were a natural disaster, you know, a hurricane, tornado, something like that, what typically happens is there's a short-term economic impact and then a very quick bounce back to previous economic levels. In fact, sometimes even an increase because insurance money flowing in and so on. In a financial crisis like the one that we had in 08, 09, there's that dramatic drop off, but the recovery period is much, much, much longer. And so the question is, with COVID, where are we between sort of what happens with a natural disaster and what happens with a financial crisis? And I think, and Gary intimated at this, I think we're somewhere in between. It's not a pure financial crisis. Much of the activity will come back. But I don't think it's all coming back, or at least not all coming back very quickly. So we're probably looking at a prolonged period of time, 2, 3, 4, 5 years before we get back to our high point on GDP. And that will, as Gary indicated, that correlation between employment, commercial insurance coverage is a tight one. And so again, absent structural reform, we're going to see more uninsured. Now, there's, and Gary, this is a point you make quite a bit, is the more and more the government is picking up the cost of healthcare, the more and more healthcare begins to look like a utility. And there's certainly going to be enormous pressure to provide access to healthcare to all Americans. We're already doing it for COVID. And it wouldn't surprise me that political pressure will push toward higher levels of coverage and access. So the possibility of there being structural reform to insurance, I think, is relatively high.
Yeah, definitely a worthy discussion, as Dave lays it out. Right now, if you think about the dollars the federal government is spending and what that's going to mean to entitlement programs, what that's going to mean to the delivery side, let alone the insurance side, it's going to be a very interesting election in November, assuming we can have it in November, where we're going to be choosing between President Trump last 4 years and what that would suggest for the next four, and whoever the Democrat is, presumably Vice President Biden, but how they will look at federal spending on health care might be remarkably different. And so we could see a definite move toward this public utility model that, as Dave mentioned, I've been talking about for some time. We can definitely see that with our health systems. Large health systems now, about 55-60% of their revenues are governmental revenues, most of that federal government. And that almost certainly will be going up. So worthy discussion, Dave Burda, for a forthcoming session.
I already wrote it down. Great idea, Gary. Thank you. Taking notes the whole time. All right. Well, great, guys. Thank you for addressing those two topics. Let's talk about the week ahead. Gary, give me a few sentences on what you think the big story in healthcare will be next week.
Well, the obvious big story that I think we all agreed last week is recovery. And the health systems are beginning to move back into urgent care surgeries and elective surgeries in those places, those health systems that can do that. But I think that we're going to see an increased number of health systems beginning to take care of the elective and urgent surgeries. What that means will be very interesting. I think there's ramifications on caregivers who in the high surge areas are worn out, and how they treat the influx of elective surgeries. Dave said he's talking about weekends and nights. Well, that's okay if you haven't been working weekends and nights for the last 6 weeks, but right. It'll be interesting to see. Definite regional differences. No question.
Great, Dave. Give me a few sentences on what will be the big story in healthcare next week.
Well, next week and probably for the next couple of months, the American public is getting an in-depth, very personal education in our federalist system. We have 50 states essentially conducting their own assessment of COVID and their recovery, and the variation in responses based on a whole number of factors, the extent to which the disease has hit, political, economic, demographic. We're getting 50 examples of how to respond to this, and some will do better and some will do worse. I saw a pretty remarkable statistic a couple of days ago that the popularity ratings or the job approval ratings of all 50 governors in all 50 states is higher than President Trump's approval rating in each of those states. So I think organically, Americans are looking more and more to state leadership than to federal leadership to get us out of this. And I'm kind of curious to see how that trend manifests itself, both this week coming up, but into the foreseeable future.
You know, Dave, let me just interrupt, because on that particular point, I interviewed former Governor Bob Kerrey, governor of Nebraska, this week on Fireside Chat podcast.
Impressive guy.
Very impressive. It was a terrific interview, wide-ranging. But at any rate, I asked him about that particular statistic that showed that the governors had, in many cases, 60, 70% approval rating. He said, you know, starting off, that's home court advantage. It's their state. They're known in the state. They're respected in the state. They have power in the state. And he would expect that in a circumstance where there's a number of decisions needed to be made that directly affect the population, that, you know, unless they really mess it up, that they will have high approval ratings.
I believe that's true. And the more effective governors will have higher ratings. The last thing I was going to say, the one thing I wish we were talking about that we won't be talking about is how the public health system in America will respond and change. There's a lot of conversation, including this one, on how the healthcare system will change and respond. But our public health infrastructure is shown to have dramatic fault lines and really needs some reinvigoration. That might be a topic for a future talk as well.
That'd be a great topic. Let's face it, we haven't put any money into the public health system in this country in years. In fact, probably the last time there was a real influx of dollars was in cleaning up the water in the early 1900s. And after that, it's been slow moving. So it'll be interesting to see whether this drives more expenditures in the public health space.
I really appreciate it, as always. That's all we have time for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed today, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.